Cincinnati City Council has a goal of building 40,000 homes in 10 years. The city has seen old downtown office buildings converted to apartments, but it's been a while since a new apartment or condominium project opened in the Central Business District. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what's getting in the way of more residential development and ideas being explored to jumpstart more construction are Cincinnati City Council member Mark Jeffries, 3CDC Senior Vice President of Development Katie Westbrook, and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterick. Thanks for being here, everybody. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Councilmember Jeffries, City Council has this goal of 4,000 new housing units a year for the next 10 years. How did Council get to that goal and how's it going?
Yeah, so currently, let's benchmark where we are now. So year to date, we're about 1,079. If you look historically at the last year and then the previous year, we do about 1,300 units a year. And so obviously, this would be triple that, which is pretty aggressive. So the objective of the 40,000 goal is a couple. One, we know that we have a housing shortage today. There have been previous studies to show that we need about 40,000 across the region. The other objective is, so this is to fill it, is really a rallying cry to figure out what has to be true in order to achieve that, right? And that means going to the administration, going to the development community, going to community partners, say, okay, if this is our goal, what are the barriers that are getting in the way of achieving that? And we're not going to achieve it by doing what we're doing today, because history is a guide. We've been doing pretty much the same amount every year. So we're going to have to do something very differently. And so part of that rallying cry was exactly that. It's like, okay, now let's go back and figure out what needs to be true. And we've been doing a lot of that work since we defined that.
Chris, Cincinnati, as I mentioned, has a number of old office buildings that are being converted to residential. How does that fit into this? How many new units has that amounted to?
Well, just this year, I believe 800 new units have gone online, and that includes the Macy's, former Macy's headquarters downtown, the kind of completion of the Mercantile Center, which is kind of on 4th Street, and I believe there's one other project. So, that's a huge injection of housing in 1 year. A lot of that had been kind of conceived before COVID or as COVID kind of continued. So those are, we need to do more of that. We have more of it on deck. The developer of Macy's, Anoop Dave, is obviously doing the Carew Tower. That's probably a multi-year, that's 4 or 5 years away, I think. So in the meantime, we have a lot of vacant lots downtown, and we wrote a story recently talking about that. So.
Yeah. I used to go to a dentist in the Carew Tower. That building needs some love.
It does.
Yeah. So, Chris, when's the last time a new residential development was built in Cincinnati's Central Business District?
It was 2021 was the completion of the 4th and Race building tower. 3CDC partnered on that with a developer out of Indianapolis. And so that was the last new building that was delivered within, within the core of the Central Business District.
Well, and Katie, speaking of 3CDC, I understand 3CDC, you own a parking lot downtown with plans to build there. Tell us about that location and what 3CDC has in mind for it.
Sure. So the location's at 7th and Vine. It's the northeast corner. It's really in a critical block. I think that when you look at downtown between Fountain Square and Court Street, the block of 700 Vine Street is a little bit tired and it really needs some love. So we were fortunate enough to get control of that a few years ago, but we just haven't been able to make the numbers work on building a new project there. So we have plans for about 70 units and are hopeful to be able to go back to the city and kind of dive into the numbers later this year.
We're talking about residential development in Cincinnati and what it will take to jumpstart more construction. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Katie, you mentioned that you've got plans for that site, haven't really been able to get started. What's gotten in the way? Why hasn't 3CDC been able to just break ground and make that happen?
I think it's the amount of subsidy that we would need from the city. And when we were ready to go forward with the city, we had a lot of asks out there. And so we just strategized together. We were working on the community center, Crossroad Health Center, the hotel downtown, the convention center. So we just kind of were prioritizing. So I think the city has appetite for it. It was just a matter of kind of restructuring resources that were available.
Yeah. Has it gotten more expensive to develop, though? I mean, you hear these days that construction has gotten a whole lot more expensive.
It's definitely gotten more expensive, but I think that it's just a big question mark. I think that daily it's changing. What is tariffs? What aren't tariffed? So it's something that we're monitoring pretty closely. But at the same time, we are hopeful interest rates are going to be coming back down. So hopefully some of that can be offset on the financing side.
Okay. We did get a question from a listener, Steve in Oakley. And Steve writes, while the need for additional housing exists, I sometimes wonder how firm the grip is on the policy rudder at City Hall. Several observations. The focus and fixation seems to be on downtown, and over the Rhine in this discussion, yet there are 50 other neighborhoods in the city. City Council seems to be for housing, except when they're not. A recent example is in Oakley, where there were 31 shovel-ready lots where the zoning was changed at the developer's request from housing to allow construction of car condos, which are now being built and sold. Net result, zero housing. I never hear mentioned the huge expansion of the apartment construction count over the last decade for student housing at UC, which does not address the needs of citizens seeking permanent housing and how it impacts perhaps negatively the running total that Mr. Jeffries is keeping. Councilmember Jeffries, I'm going to let you respond to that. There was a lot in there.
Sure. Obviously, downtown has a couple of advantages because we can go up pretty significantly. So I'll address downtown and then the rest of the neighborhoods. Downtown, if you take it, the density, for example, at one Lytle Place, you know, per acre, we can basically build up to 625 units per acre. For perspective on the surface parking lot that Chris said, there are 71 acres of surface parking downtown. In theory, if you converted all of that, you're never going to. You could add 44,000 units downtown alone.
44,000
units. Now, you're never going to do all of that. That's a theoretical mathematical exercise, right? But the point being that you can go up. And as we've seen, you know, neighborhoods have input into the type of housing they want, and which is when we did Connected Communities, why we wanted gentle density, having more middle housing, having, you know, more 2-3 family. And that's where I would say the emphasis is all those transit corridors that we as a community invested in issue 7. So as especially a bus rapid transit goes out on Reading and then also on Hamilton, those are opportunities. There's a lot of land there where there will be opportunities to grow. In fact, we're going to do an RFP for some city-owned land to encourage more housing. So I think it's an and. It is downtown. There's huge opportunity there. But in the neighborhoods out along those transit corridors, the other thing is we've been doing a lot of work in the Mill Creek Valley. 33% of the Mill Creek is vacant. And we've been partnering with the port and the community. What's the vision? We're going to be unveiling that in early October. The vision for the future of kind of the Mill Creek and what does that entail?
Chris.
I think it's worth the city focusing on downtown because, and you'll see in the story, you know, you have downtown residents who want more development. They want bigger buildings. They want density. When you try to do this in the neighborhoods, you have a big fight. And that, you know, I've covered the city and development for 12 years and, you know, on more times, more often than not, development is opposed. They don't like the design.
In
neighborhoods, yeah. They don't like the design. They don't like the number of people that are going to bring. They don't like the cars. Whatever it is, the vocal members of those communities, you know, it's a big fight. And I think it makes a lot of sense to try to inject some more development downtown because people still want to live downtown. There is a belief that Bobby Maley, the CEO of Model Group, has said we could probably absorb 20,000 more units. That's an enormous number of housing compared to what we have today. So, I think there's a pretty good case for it.
Chris, you know, Councilmember Jeffries just mentioned these surface parking lots. You wrote about that a lot in your cover story from a couple weeks back. What makes it so difficult for developers to buy those lots and turn them into something else, to these towers? Is it because they just make so much money?
Yeah, they're a great business. Like, if you own a parking lot, it's kind of like owning a printing press for money. The issue is the land is valued a certain amount by the auditor and whatnot, but the actual value is in the business of parking, right? And the CEO of 3CDC, Steve Leeper, said in the story that they're going to want a multiple of the income that they make from those parking lots. So that means kind of either dealing them in on the development itself, which sometimes they don't even want to do, or you know, overpaying for the parking lot. And so the choices there are not great from a financial standpoint. There's other options, the other public policy things the city could pursue. They could pass a parking tax. Cleveland has one. It's 8% per space on the surface parking lots.
Is that a tax the owners pay or the parkers pay?
That is up to the owners. They will probably pass that on to the parkers, no doubt. But it makes the land a little bit more tough to, you know, keep as a parking lot. And then there's eminent domain, which is really kind of a third rail. No elected official is probably going to touch that, but it exists.
Yeah. I watched that play out with the stadium project.
I remember you did.
Yes. Katie, how did 3CDC gain control of the parking lot you all own at 7th and Vine? I mean, did you just sweet talk the person who used to own it? How'd you convince them to sell?
Well, I'll give all the credit to Steve Leeper on that
he
one.
He sweet talked them.
Yeah. He developed a relationship with the group, and I think was just able to tell a compelling story about 3CDC and what we do. So he secured that lot from this group, and then also the Wex Garage, which is going to be used for supporting the hotel and the convention center down the line. So just developing a relationship.
Okay. Councilmember Jeffries, you know, Chris was just talking about how these new developments can face a lot of opposition in neighborhoods, you know, for a variety of reasons. But there is lots of old housing stock in Cincinnati's neighborhoods, a lot of vacant single-family homes or small multi-unit development projects or even larger apartment buildings that are vacant right now. What does the city have a strategy for trying to bring those back into circulation to make sure they don't just get kind of demolished because they're neglected? Or
yeah, it's a great question. And not only a strategy, we actually passed an ordinance on that. So earlier this year, we passed a vacant building registration ordinance. So for perspective, there's about 2,800 vacant buildings in the city of Cincinnati, and that's defined as the water's been turned off for at least 6 months. Right. And of those 2,800, 97% of them have had a police or fire call, which frankly, there's no reason for people to come out if there's no water. Nobody should be living there. And they have multiple, on average, 7 calls per. You know, so that's pretty significant. It costs the city $8.5 million per year to service these. So we passed a vacant building registration, and it'll go into effect next year. What that does is it requires the owner to register and then indicate what their plan is. They need a maintenance plan. You can't just let the doors open so people can come in. But then also, what's your plan to turn it around? So to the point earlier of giving people an incentive, I think this will give those owners an incentive. Like, okay, it's kind of a pain to register it every 6 months. That'll give them incentive to, okay, what's a more productive use for that? Either they redevelop themselves into housing, because if you think about it, 2,800 units, and that could be a lot of housing, a lot of people we could house right there. And so I think that's an important step. And again, that'll go into effect next year once that hopefully pushes those folks who own those buildings to develop it into more productive housing use.
Yeah. And I could be remembering this incorrectly, but I thought the city had a vacant building maintenance license program for many years. Has that just not worked?
We do have it without getting into the weeds on how this is too different. The way that works today is you complain, you have a neighbor and you complain, and then that person's then fined, and then eventually we condemn it.
It's reactive.
This is more proactive, and you say, hey, look, if you own it and you need to maintain it, make sure that it's maintained, which frankly, the other part of it is unfair to do to all the neighbors. Mm-hmm. All the neighbors who play by the rules, keep their house up, and then you have one vacant building that's going to bring down your street, bring down your property. It's also an issue of fairness.
Yeah. And the goal is to make sure those owners try to bring them back as housing.
Exactly.
Okay. You know, Councilmember Jeffries, you talked about how the city has some land that it owns, that there are ways to leverage that into more housing. What about tax increment financing? Is that something that could be a strategy to help with this?
Yeah. So we've been having discussion, as you know, so the tax increment financing, the TIF districts, there are districts throughout the city. So we have been having discussion of how can we leverage those more effectively, especially downtown. So could we... do we want to bond against it? Do we want to leverage it so that we can enable more gap financing for projects that are on the ready? So I would say today we don't have a real strategy of how we use TIF districts. You know, we just basically respond when there's a need, as opposed to what is a more proactive strategy. So that has been a conversation that's been going on and work going on in the last 6 months that hopefully we'll be pulling together here in the next year.
Katie, do you think Cincinnati has enough local developers to create the housing the city needs?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think when you look at other cities, my answer would be no. But, you know, I think that requires groups like the city to be able to come together and help put together packages that will incentivize other developers to come here.
Yeah. How hard is it to make money for these developers, Chris?
You know, they need subsidy, and I know that, you know, oh, they're rich developers, you know. But the fact of the matter is, and I think Mark pointed this out in the story, you know, if you're only making 3, 4, or 5% on your investment in a development, you are better off taking your money and going to the S&P 500 because you're going to make more money over time. So it needs to be sufficiently profitable for them to do it. And, you know, that has been an obstacle. And it's been an obstacle for the entire time that I've covered government and development here, which is 12 years. So it's never stopped being an issue. I think it's an issue more than ever now, which is kind of surprising because for many years we kind of were getting, you know, maybe less subsidy was needed. But the fact of, as Katie pointed out earlier, the tariffs, the interest rates and construction costs going up, all of that is a stew that is just driving up the need for more incentives.
Well, and what does that mean when it comes to creating housing that has a range of costs, whether it's for sale or rental? I mean, we talked about some of these historic buildings, trying to preserve those, make them, instead of knocking them down, bring those back online. How difficult is it for a developer to have affordable housing? And we all know that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Even more subsidy for affordable housing. I mean, you know, there is the LIHTC program, which is, you know, kind of a federal state situation where they are, you know, they are subsidizing those projects even more in order to build them. The city has its own programs that kind of try to get at affordability kind of on the higher end, the 80% of area median income. They have a program called NOFA that smaller developers have used to build projects that are more affordable. But yeah, the more you get into affordability as a question, the more help you need from the government in order to make it, you know, to make it work. As far as the for sale question is really interesting. 3CDC is really the only developer that has built condos in the city. There are a few exceptions, but really the most of them have been built by 3CDC. And that's a situation where the obstacle is you basically have to pre-sell a bunch of it in order to get a bank to finance it. And you know, that's a huge problem and probably another cover story that we ought to write. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, people who are empty nesters and want to downsize, they kind of want to buy still a little bit, but they want to buy something smaller. And the product is not here.
Hmm. Is that a challenge, Katie?
Yeah. I mean, thinking of for sale in particular, two things come to mind. One being, if you look at a project like Crewe Tower and they're utilizing the state historic tax credits, you can't actually use those in for sale housing. So you have to put that towards an apartment use. The apartments we have done, or the condos we have done to date, we actually sold our last one, I think it was in 2024, and we're exploring adding condos back into our development pipeline, but trying to figure out an affordable way to do that so that we're not selling million-dollar condos, but we're selling stuff that people can afford, families can afford, that want to live downtown and over the Rhine.
Do you want to add to that, Councilor?
Yeah, just one other thought on affordability. So a couple of years ago, we leveraged Cincinnati Development Fund to, and then we've been investing $5 million plus in the Affordable Housing and Trust Fund. And in 2023-2024, on average, we built 715 units that were income-restricted affordable. That compares to 2017 to 2022 when it was 256. So almost three times more affordable units. So the mechanism of CDF, of leveraging all these other capital, federal, state, private, is actually very effective in terms of building more income-restricted housing.
Yeah. We're running short on time, but we have a call from Art. Art asks, what plans are there to expand restaurants, businesses, et cetera, downtown, all the stuff that needs to go along with housing? Is that something council's working on too?
Yeah, actually, I funded in this budget a downtown development plan. The last time we had one was 1985. And downtown has clearly changed a lot. We have a lot more residential. And as a part of that, actually, I had a discussion earlier today with Director Carter, is, do we need a retail study? Like, what kind of retail do we need if we have more residents? Before it was all CPD, just, you know, the businesses. Now we have more residents. You know, what kind of residents are they? Are they empty nesters versus if they're families with kids, you need different services. So I think that's work that we now really need to do to be a little bit more deliberate as we go into this downtown development plan of not just downtown, but also into Queensgate, the land we're getting back from the Brent Spence Bridge reclaiming. Like, what's the plan for that along Eggleston? Like, there are a lot of opportunities, and we'll be kicking off that work here in the next couple of months.
You got plenty of cover stories coming out of all this, Chris.
I would say you need more people to have retail, and we've seen that for decades now. I mean, remember when we were bringing Nordstrom to downtown? I mean, that was
String of Pearls.
Yeah,
I remember that. Yep. That goes back a ways. Well, this has been fascinating. Anything else that you want to add, Katie, about what it's going to take to move this ball forward?
No, I mean, it's going to take people like Councilmember Mark Jeffries sitting across from me to come to the table and help us figure it all out.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries, 3CDC Senior Vice President of Development, Katie Westbrook, and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist, Chris Wetterich. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.